Okay, let's get started. There are raspberry bars. They're fun, they're nice, they're good to eat. Feel free to eat them. It happens to be Deepavali, which is a very big festival in India over the weekend. So that's part of the reason. The other part is raspberry bars have to be bought every time I teach a course, otherwise my raspberry bar sellers would get mad at me. So I had to go. And then the homework three and the project are both due. I assume you put them back there already. Okay. So I was going to do the block questions discussion. Presumably all of you have figured out the answers. I'm going to ask you to tell me the answers for these. Let's see. Okay. That's the first question. You've been given the topology of a Bayes network. You haven't been given the conditional probability tables yet. And somebody comes and tells you, here is the entire joint distribution. I'm giving it to you by hand, okay? So you don't need to worry about it, this is it. You have some reasons to distrust this joint distribution. You know, you really can't put your finger on it, but you feel that this guy made up these numbers, really, okay? Is there any way you can prove that this cannot be the joint distribution given the current Bayes network? Yeah, I know. I mean, that would be a really loser friend. So yeah, it's like when they start saying probability is 10.91 or something, then you're in trouble. So let's assume that this guy is not that silly. So he or she made sure that the joint did add up to 1, you know. But there are so many different ways you can make up 2 power n numbers such that they all add up to 1, right? And they're all between 0 and 1, and they all add up to 1. And there's like an infinite number of ways you can do that. So you have an answer? You can check for conditional independence based on the topology. How would you do that? Did anybody understand what he just said? If anybody did not understand, please raise your hand. Okay. So we have been saying that Bayes networks, let's say this is our normal Bayes network, so this is burglary, earthquake, alarm, and Mary calls and John calls and Mary calls. Yeah. Okay. Right. So we have been saying that a Bayes network topology somehow constrains the joint distribution. Okay? Somehow if you did not know anything about this domain and all you knew was there were 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 variables, okay, any 32 numbers, I mean, that add up to 1 would have been a joint distribution. Presumably, if you took the time to draw this picture, it must cut out some of the things. Otherwise, what's the point? I mean, what did you know now that you didn't know before? Okay. So what this actually does tell you is, of course, all these conditional independence assertions. Okay. So for example, we do know that, what do we know? For example, probability of, let's say, so this is being caused by B and E. So in this case, let's say here, J. Probability of J given A, B, E. According to this network is probability of J given A. In normal distributions, these are two different numbers, right? You can compute this number from your joint, the friend gave you a joint distribution, right? You can compute this number from his or her joint distribution, you can compute this number. If they are not equal, then you know this guy does not actually, is not giving the right distribution. Okay, similarly, you know, if this is okay, but then you can check this one, probability M given A and J equal to probability M given A. That's another conditional conditional independence assertion, right? So if this guy succeeds on this test, you can do one more test. Any of these tests, this distribution fails, then it cannot be a distribution for this network. It's a very, very important insight. I hope you understand this. You know, if nothing changes before and after you found out about the topology of the network, then why write the topology of the network? Okay, as you learn more about the world, as you learn more knowledge, you learn that certain types of worlds are not possible. In propositional logic, we have found that anytime you learn an extra axiom that you add to your knowledge base, that cuts down the number of possible worlds that you could be in. Okay, if you didn't know anything, you could be in any possible world. But as soon as I start writing sentences, I cut down the number of possible worlds I can actually be in. And the same thing here. If I didn't have any topology, then I could be in any joint distribution over 5 variables. The moment I write a topology, it cannot be all possible joint distributions, only those which factorize this way. In fact, it turns out that there are actually two important issues that go on here. One is factorization. The other is conditional independence assertion. And both are important. What we actually checked just now is conditional independence assertion. Okay. The factorization thing essentially says that the entire probability distribution B, E, A, J, M, which is the full joint, right? It factorizes as PB times PE times PA given BE times PJ given A times PM given A. So whatever is the joint distribution, the 32 numbers, will be actually, you should be able to factorize them into 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 functions which are multiplied, 5 conditional probability tables which are multiplied. It's a constraint. Not everything would have this property. Okay? So you factorize, and so Bayes networks tell you, for example, the topology tells you how the joint distribution factorizes. Now it turns out that factorization also holds, for example, a factorization of this type also holds in undirected models, which we won't talk about much. The other thing, of course, is given the Bayes network, there are certain conditional independence assertions that actually hold. And if your distribution doesn't satisfy them, then it couldn't have been the real distribution. Okay? It's a very important point. I hope you understand this. Anybody else? Anyone has a question on that still? Yes. Yeah. Okay, that's different. So you're talking about how do I get right number? That's basically learning the right number. Okay, so we will talk about, for example, how did I come up with those numbers? Presumably I did some actual sampling in the world and found out these probabilities. Okay. But my friend was essentially saying, look, you don't need to go into the world. I'm giving you numbers. So he or she came bearing gift. And I want to be distrustful. I want to check, is this really, am I getting something free? Okay. Exactly. You cannot prove that this is correct. You can prove that this is possibly wrong. That's very important. That's what I asked. You are distrusting this guy, but your friend can, if he or she did enough Bayes networks courses, right, they could have, as you said, come up with some numbers here and here and here, made each of these numbers up. each of these CPT numbers up, multiplied them and given it to you. And then you would be happy. At least at that point you can no longer prove your friend to be correct on syntactic, prove your friend to be incorrect on syntactic grounds. You then have to prove your friend to be incorrect on the semantic grounds, basically by saying, look, I don't trust you, I think your prior probability for B is wrong, let me go to Los Angeles, do some sampling. I'll do Nielsen survey and find out how often do burglaries occur in Los Angeles. But it's useful. I mean, a C program, you know, a compiler throws out a C program first based on, syntactic errors, which is okay. So that's basically what we are talking about here. It's a good point. You know, we can never prove that he's right, but you can prove some, you know, whether the sanity check, does it make sense? Yes. What is possible? Yeah, I mean, if you make up by, just make them up by hand, then they're as good as what you made up, essentially. But keep that question and ask me right after the second question, okay? My second question is that I have another friend now. This guy is ready to give me a number. He won't just give me the entire joint distribution, he or she is ready to give me each of the CPTs. You know, here a CPT, here a CPT, here one, here one, here one. Okay, they're going to make them up. Now, you know, presumably they have some oracle, they pray to the god and get these numbers and give it to you. Your worry now is, you don't think your friend is necessarily cheating you, but your worry is this guy is not particularly smart. And you're worried that maybe they'll give too many numbers in specifying this Bayes network such that they will wind up being inconsistent. You can be inconsistent by talking too much. Okay, so for example, if I want to give you, as I said, if your friend is ready to give you P of A, P of B, P of A and B, as well as P of A R B, and if they don't add up according to the rule of probabilities, which is ARB equal to A plus B minus A and B, then your friend, then you will go into inconsistency. Okay, similarly, if they give you, if they give you the conditional probabilities A given B, B given A, as well as P of A, and as well as P of B, and they don't satisfy the Bayes rule, that can become inconsistent. When you're making up large number of numbers, you can be inconsistent. That means there is really no possible joint distribution that can be consistent with it. Is that possible? That's my second question. Is it possible for your friend, you know what it means to specify CPT tables for Bayes network. So you would only be asking the questions you want answered and your friend will be giving these numbers. Is it possible that your friend can give you numbers that can lead you to inconsistency? I'm going to ask names, I guess. No one? Exactly. That's actually a useful thing. Okay, in fact, if you're only filling in the values for these, we are saying there is no way could they ever get you into inconsistency. They could be wrong in the sense the probabilities that they gave have no real connection to the real world. But they can never be wrong in this kind of a sense that somehow they will wind up violating laws of probability. It is useful when you are doing knowledge acquisition. So many a time what happens when you are computing these probabilities is you don't necessarily do large scale experiments. You are not calling up people in the dinner time and asking them, what do you think is the probability that alarm goes off if burglary goes and earthquake has not happened. You know, that's what you're supposed to be doing to assess these probabilities. You're not really doing that. Oftentimes what people do is they go to an expert and say, expert, give me a number. And the experts think and make up a number and give it to you. Now all they can say is, these numbers are sort of in the right range. They're not exactly correct, but they're sort of in the right range. In fact, we'll look at all sorts of examples of Bayesian expert systems in medicine, where these numbers, many of these numbers were just asked of the experts, and they gave these numbers up. Okay? And the real question then is, how could they get us into trouble of this type? And that's not possible in Bayes networks. You'll never ask too many questions such that they can get you into inconsistency in terms of probability. Now, if they could be wrong, the numbers they made up could be wrong, you know, in which case it'll just be as good as the input number. Okay. However, yes.
Is it not possible because you have a given topology for your baseline? So if your friend gives you numbers, the numbers resulting from that will be adapted according to the topology of that. Is that why it's not possible?
No, part of it is think it this way. You would never ask all these four. If you ask A given B, you would never ask B given A.
So the other one is obviously.
So, and the other one would be computed on demand. So just don't ask too many questions. If you ask too many questions, believe it or not, if you ask your expert, give me the numbers for this, 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 and this, they are more than willing to give you all those numbers up, you know, because after about 2 hours of interview, they're sick and tired of you. They're going to give you some numbers so you can get out of their home, okay? So don't ask. You know, ask only the ones, you know, either A given B or B given A. Between those two, which would you ask? A given B, B given A, which would you ask? Whichever is in the causal direction. So if in fact A and B are here, then you would basically ask, you know, B and E given A. That's what you would ask. Because you believe that people are better at assessing those probabilities. And here's another very interesting point which actually comes up, which you may or may not have thought about. I'm saying making up probabilities. There are no experiments. In probability 101, you've been told that each probability number is objective truth. Okay? And in fact, the number that you have is essentially, if you do infinite number of experiments and you put the denominator, so the number of times, you know, if you're talking about a conditional probability A given B, then you're looking at infinite number of worlds, looking at the fraction of worlds where B is true, putting that in the denominator, number of worlds where B is true, putting it in the denominator, fraction of worlds where both A and B are true, putting it in the numerator, and you're taking that fraction, and that is the probability. And that view of probability is called frequentist probability. Okay? So you're only going to use probabilities where you can do these experiments, and you think of probabilities as frequencies. Now, one of the other reasons, as I sent a long mail once in one of the days, as one of the other reasons why Bayes is popular is not just because the Bayes rule, but because Bayes said you don't need to have, you know, probabilities be computed using frequentist methods. All you want is you can have a personal probability. Okay? So I asked this guy, what do you think is the probability of burglary prior probability of burglary in Los Angeles? This guy's an optimist. He said, not much. Okay, so it's 0.001. And I ask somebody else there, they are paranoid. I think, I'm sure it's at least 0.9 or something. Okay? This is his personal prior probability, that's his personal prior probability. Okay? So the question then is, if this guy believes that burglaries don't occur and still goes about buying costly burglar alarms to install in his home, then I get to laugh at him. Then I say, your belief system is inconsistent. On one hand, you're saying burglaries don't occur. On the other hand, you're going about buying all the burglary alarms. And similarly, if this guy says, burglaries occur 90% of the time and puts all his valuables outside the home, then I get to laugh at him too because he's again inconsistent with his belief system. Okay? So there's this notion of personal probabilities. All you are looking for is, are you consistent with your personal probability? Okay? The Bayesian reasoning allows that. And in fact, that is a sort of an answer to your question, which is, if I made up these numbers, what do I know? What you know is whether you are consistent with respect to your own number. Okay? So, this whole probability ultimately will be used to decide what action to do. And if you think your probabilities are saying you should be buying burglar alarms, you should be buying them. No, if they are not, then you shouldn't be. Okay. So this sort of separates out absolute notions of probability from personal probability. And, you know, all the rules apply, essentially, in Bayesian reasoning. Okay. That one is the last one. So I want a little base network to be drawn such that it's just on four variables, x, y, w, and z. Just want a base network to be drawn on these x, y, and w, z such that exactly the following two conditional independent assertions hold. X is conditionally independent of y given w and z. Okay. Is one. The other is W is conditionally independent of Z given X and Y. That's all. My question is, can you draw a Bayes network? And this is an answer to a question that was brought up last class, whether if you know exactly the conditional independence assertions that hold in your domain, can you make a Bayes network up which exactly captures that? And I said you cannot necessarily. My question is, can you capture this? This is a simple enough case. Can you draw a four-node Bayes network? Yes. This is, no, X is, so X, Y, W, and Z. So X is independent of Y given W and Z, and W is independent of Z given X and Y. Oh, really? Ooh. Okay, so that's not good. So I'm sure, obviously, you guys had a network for that. Wrong one, at any rate. So, I mean, that's unfortunate. I should have checked. W independent of Z given X and Y. No, this doesn't make any syntactic sense. You know, something cannot be both in the evidence and in the independent statement. I guess you guys were too busy to even look at this. That's a different story. Yes, who wants to answer this? What? Yeah, it cannot have cycles. So you're saying there is no such thing,
yeah.
Right? Why can't, let's make one up and see. I mean, there are only four variables, right? There are not that many graphs on four nodes. There are not that many graphs on four nodes. So you just try all of them and see if any one of them. They have to be directed and they have to be acyclic. Okay, so here is my question. First question is this. Why is that not a correct graph? Why is that not a correct graph? I have just four variables and four nodes, no connection. Everything is independent of everything, right? So clearly this two is independent of this, this two is independent of this. Why is that not enough? No, it is conditional independent. If you are independent, then you are also conditional independent. Okay, so if X is independent of Y, so in this particular case, actually in this, no, I'm sorry, I'll take it back. In this particular case, it is true that not only is X independent of Y, X is also independent of Y, even if I tell you about G and W. It's not always the case, I have to take it back, that just, you know, because in fact last class we pointed out that sometimes two things can be independent without any evidence, but given evidence they become dependent. Okay, but in this graph, it's not possible. Given how much our evidence, if you know X is independent of Y to begin with, I give W and Z, they'll still be independent of Y. So in fact, I would argue that this graph does satisfy these conditional independence assertions. So why is this not an answer? Yes. It also satisfies every other thing in the world. We don't want the rest of them. Okay, we only want the ones that we want. Okay. So, what other ones? Basically, this is the kind of question where you have to argue to yourself that it will induce a cycle. Okay, so a simple way, tell me a simple way of making at least one of them true. How do I make X independent of Y given W and Z? Yes. This is a way. That's a way. That does capture this guy. But then does it capture this? In fact, if anything, it is exactly opposite. It's in fact not conditionally independent, because the moment you give the children, if you give x and y, w and g are in fact independent, in fact dependent, because of the explaining away factor. So I told you last time that there are examples where, you know, Bayes networks cannot capture simple independence relations. This is as simple as it can get. I just have four nodes, two simple independence relations, and I can't capture them using Bayes network. I can either capture higher up or lower down, more or less, but not exactly these. Okay? Now it turns out that I also said that there are undirected models which sometimes have complementary strength. And in fact, here is an undirected model which will work. The diamond. Why does it work? It turns out, again, you know, I'm sort of giving you a teaser on undirected models because I'm not going to discuss them fully. It turns out that conditional independences in undirected models are much more easier to check. You don't need the notion of baseball because there are no directions. In fact, conditional independences in undirected networks are directly connected to graph separation. You would say in any undirected graph, two nodes are separated by two other nodes. I mean, a set of nodes are separated by another set of nodes. If every path between a node here and a node here has to pass through one of these guys. So if you remove these nodes, they are disjointed. So in some sense, it's like you can say that I-10, if I-10 is the only road, you know, that we have, then I-10, if you blow I-10 to bits, then in essence, no, Casa Grande, let's say, Casa Grande to bits, then in essence, you can't go from Phoenix to Tucson. Okay, so Casa Grande separates Phoenix from Tucson. Okay, so that's the normal graph separability idea. Okay, and for undirected variables, that just works directly. Undirected graph, that is the only conditional independence assertions that hold. So in this case, if I take these two, they do separate x and y. So if I, there is no way of going from x to y without going through z and w, z or w. And similarly, these two will separate these two. Okay. And it turns out that you can also provide, just as, you know, this doesn't mean that this is a superset of this. You can provide examples where undirected networks cannot capture the independence assertions that you have, but directed Bayes nets can capture. Okay? Any questions on this stuff? Okay, by the way, this stuff would be more fun if you actually bother thinking before showing up, because otherwise it's just part of the lecture. Okay. One last thing. Somebody mentioned the homework 3 is online. I'm sorry, project 3 is online, and somebody mentioned on the blog that it's great, especially, or at least not partly just because it doesn't have list. So turns out that you don't need to do any list coding for the part that I put up. And I found this somewhere, and I thought this is a good reason for you to learn this. Okay. Okay. Any questions on anything that we did last time or today before I go forward? Yes.
About Markov Planck, there are two different.
Okay, that I'll get to in a minute. In fact, that's, there should be questions about conditional independence because I rushed through it in the end of the last class. If you did not, then either you understood it by reading the book or you're just asleep, as you seem to be right now. So there should really be questions, and I plan to review that part. Are there any other questions? Okay, so let me just talk about conditional independence assertions in Bayes nets. It turns out that there are two bedrock conditional independence assertions that hold in Bayes networks. In fact, one of them, basically they say they are assumptions. You know, when you draw a network, you make sure that these hold. That's the only reason you drew the network. Okay, these are called essentially local Markov assumptions. Okay, and these are assumptions, and given these assumptions, all other conditional independent assertions can follow. So these are the only ones that you assume to be true, just given the tree topology, the network topology. And everything else can then follow from just straightforward algebra of conditional independences. Okay. Now what are those? These are actually, turns out these are equivalent. One way of thinking about is that a node is independent of its non-descendant, a node is independent of its non-descendant given its immediate parent. Okay. So here, it's as long as for x I have given all its immediate parents u1 and um, then it is independent of all these guys, but not independent of these guys because these are descendants. Okay, and this also involves x being independent of its siblings. Okay. Another way of thinking about this, it turns out this is equivalent to this. This is the Markov blanket idea, where you say a node X is independent of everybody else given its Markov blanket. And the Markov blanket, of course, is its immediate parents, its children, because previously all other descendants have to go through the children, and children's other parents. Turns out these are equivalent, and showing that is hard, but take it from me. But these two are the only assumptions that you make. You make one assumption, the other follows. Okay. Now, once you make these assumptions, then I should be able to answer whether some other conditional independences hold. They might hold just because they're true from the assumption itself, or they might hold because of the way conditional independences interact, just using rules of probability. Okay. And to answer random questions like that, you need essentially some notion of separability, some notion of evidence nodes separating other nodes. So X is independent of Y given Z means somehow Z is separating X from Y. And as I said, for undirected graphs, the separability is the same as the graph separability. But for directed graphs, unfortunately, it's kind of trickier because, as we saw last time, for directed graphs, depending upon the direction of the arrows, you may or may not block a path. So in fact, the notion of separability for directed graphs is called DSEP, or directed separability, directional separability. Okay, and the easy way to compute all the directional separabilities are either by using the Bayes-Ball algorithm, which we discussed last time, which basically just considers these following four cases. Okay, so here are, you know, given a node, either you can have, you know, from the node, these two are going down, or are to the node, both are coming. Okay. In this case, basically, if you put a ball here, it would not pass through here to here, because essentially the common parent shields X from Z. But if you don't give the parent, then it does go from here to here. Exactly the opposite happens here. In this case, if X and Z, and they both have a common child, if you don't say anything about the child, there is no way this guy influences this guy. So the ball here won't go to here. Otherwise, if in fact I do tell you what is the child's value, then because of the explaining away, the ball will actually progress out. Once you know this, you can essentially answer, given any two nodes, given any X, Y, and Z, you know, X is, and you can tell whether X is independent of Y given Z. Okay? And remember that in the Bayes-Ball algorithm, you put balls in the X nodes and try to see if any of them reach any of the Z nodes. Okay? And we looked at these examples last time. So for example, is X1 independent of X6 given X2 and X3? Yes, because in essence, these guys, so any ball put on X1 would not pass via X2 to X6. And similarly, cannot also pass via X3 to X6. That's the only way it can pass. So they are independent. Okay. However, in this case, is x2 independent of x3 given x1 and x6? Now let me ask you a simpler question first. Suppose x6 is not given. So x6 is white, not shaded. Then is x2 independent of x3? Yes. Because remember, if this is a parent, then a ball from here would get stopped here. Right? Whereas once you have this in the evidence, the ball from here would bounce this side and can come like this. So that's the way of looking at directional separation. If that bothers you too much, you know, you don't like bouncing balls, then here is a much simpler way of understanding directional separability. Yet another way. And this is much closer to, ultimately remember that balls reaching from one place to another place depends on whether there's a road on which they can travel. So is there a path? Okay. And you do realize that balls don't seem to care about the directionality of the arrows. Balls don't seem to care about the directionality of the arrows, right? You know, this ball came here and just bounced and came back this side. So it doesn't seem to care it's one way road or two, you know, both way road. It seems to travel in opposite direction sometimes if they want. Okay. So in a way, what you would wind up talking about is first think about all the undirected paths between X and Y. All the undirected paths. So ignore the directions for a minute. Ignore the one-way signs for a minute. And just consider all the paths from X to Y. You would say X is conditionally independent of Y given evidence nodes in E, where X can be a set of nodes, Y can be a set of nodes, E can be a set of nodes. If every undirected path from X to Y is blocked by E, it has to be blocked. So every path has to be stopped. Okay. Now, how can it be blocked? It turns out these are the three conditions. And it turns out these are equivalent to the Bayes-Ball algorithm. Okay. So this condition says, and this is, look at this picture. So X are these nodes here. Y are these nodes here. And there are some evidence nodes. You know, these are anything that's in this region is evidence nodes. You would consider that a path to be blocked if there exists a node Z on that path such that one of these conditions is satisfied. And if these conditions are not satisfied, then the path is not blocked. And if a single path is not blocked, then X and Y are dependent on each other. Okay? Whichever you like. You know, you like bouncing balls or you like this. Okay? So in this case, the three conditions are Z is in the evidence. So on the path, there is a node, Z, such that Z is in the evidence node, and the last arrow reaches Z and goes out of Z. Last arrow coming, so remember there's a path, right? So a path will always have a sequence of edges. So the edges that are incident on Z and out, now at that point, once you come up to that, then you actually change your mind and start looking at the direction. I said first consider all the undirected, first consider paths without caring about direction. But now when I'm answering these, I actually look at the direction. So it goes into Z and goes out. Or both go out of Z. Or notice that I don't have a version where Z is here and both come into Z. Why not? If both come into Z, it's not blocked. It's a scenario where Z is a descendant of X and Y ultimately. And so in fact through Z they can both be dependent. So you don't put, remember we are talking about, you know, the rules under which the path will be blocked. And so we won't put Z being here such that both arrows coming in. So that's considered, you know, so either this is true or this is true, or the node Z, the node Z, neither Z nor any of its descendants are in the evidence. So neither Z nor any of its descendants are in the evidence. And also the arrows lead out of Z. Okay, if any of these three conditions is satisfied, then the path is blocked. Okay, that single path is blocked, and then if every path is blocked, then the nodes are blocked. Yes, sir. All descendants. Yeah. All descendants. Yes.
Wouldn't condition 3 make more sense if it said something like neither Z nor any of its descendants are in E when both path arrows lead to Z? Is it that for the first part of it, is it when both the arrows are leading to Z or? I change the term, I'm trying to understand it. When you have both arrows leading to Z, then if that first part of the sentence is true.
So this is, no, but I think we are talking about when it is blocked, not when it is independent. Okay, so in this case, either Z, not I think, and then, so in this case, it's considered blocked.
Right.
In this case, I don't know what happened. In this case, it would be considered blocked. And
so
in other cases, the influence will pass, and so they would become dependent. Okay. Anyway, the reason I brought this up essentially is sort of advanced material from Bayes networks. Everybody just looks at Bayes networks, looks at the topology, looks at the conditional probability tables and starts cranking up the numbers. Okay. But it'll be worth understanding what constraints are Bayes networks putting on the underlying joint probability distribution. In essence, they are putting a certain conditional independence assumption, which will then lead to lots of other conditional independence assumptions, all of which must be holding in the underlying joint probability distribution. Now, it turns out that when you are, you would never really, other than understanding probabilistic influences, you don't actually wind up using either the baseball or the DCEP. Most of the time, you are happy enough just to understand this. If you understand this, if you know this assumption, then in fact that's the one I use to factorize my probability distribution, joint distribution. Okay, so that's enough. Okay, so let's look at, are there any questions on anything else that we said here? Okay, let's look at constructing Bayes networks. I sort of said originally that if you know the causality, then you go ahead and put the arrows from the causing variables to caused variables. And also, if X is causing Y and Y is causing Z, then you try not to put an arrow directly from X to Z, unless there is a way X is causing Z, not through Y. Okay, this is the normal understanding. A sort of a systematic way of doing this is sort of to say, pick an ordering on the variables, start introducing the variables into the network, and then as you introduce new variables into the network, you ask your expert, do you think this, what are the previous variables that this new variable is dependent on? And put links for that. And depending on the order in which you introduce the variables, you could wind up having better versus worse base net. Both, all of them will have exact same semantics, except some of them might need more numbers than others. And that's what we were talking about last time. Here is an example of how this could work. Now again, the idea as to why you should understand this is sometimes you know some weak theory of causation in a domain. That domain itself could be completely new and you don't know what causes what, neither does the expert know everything about what causes what. In that, you just ask directed questions and then they can try to answer whether they think these are caused by each other or not. Okay. So in this case, suppose I chose the ordering for my domain. Oh, this thing is dead. Choose the ordering, Mary, John, alarm, burglary, earthquake. Suppose that's the order in which I put them in. Then what do? So I put in Mary, and then I put in John. First I put in Mary, then I put in, and when I put in Mary, there's nobody else who can put a link to Mary. Now I put in John calling. My question is, knowing what you know about the domain, do you think that John calling would be influenced by Mary calling? Don't think about the previous base network. Just think about the domain. If I just come and tell you, by the way, Mary called. Now, what do you think? Do you think John will call or not? Yes. So, is it influenced or not? Yes, it's influenced. So, you actually have to put a link. This is the question. I know originally I said Mary called, and then I said, now what do you think? John will be calling or not? If you say, I don't think it depends on whether Mary called or not, then you don't have to put a link. But if you say, I think, yeah, it does depend on Mary calling, then you have to put a link. Okay. Next, I introduce alarm. Okay. And so the question is alarm going to be, now is your belief in alarm going to be dependent on information about Mary calling? Yeah. How about John calling? Yeah. Okay. Now I introduce burglary. Now the question is my belief in burglary occurring dependent upon alarm? If somebody tells me alarm is going up, if somebody jumps and tells me alarm is going up, would I change my belief in burglary? Yes. Would I change my belief if I just don't know about this but Mary called? Yes. I'm sorry. Let's see. If I did not, so the question is, if we do believe, in this case, if you do believe that I tell you that alarm is going off and Mary also called, do you consider your belief in burglary to increase or remain the same? If you think it increases, then you must put a link. If you think it remains the same in your domain, then you only put this one link. Now, it could be either way, depending on what you know about your domain. In your domain, if Mary has additional reasons by which she can find out whether burglary is going up than just by alarm, then she can call you even unconnected to alarm. Okay? If by deciding not to put it, again, there is no right versus wrong answer. It's a question of what do you think are the connections in the domain. By deciding not putting an alarm link from Mary to burglary, what I'm saying is the only way Mary influences my belief in burglary is through alarm. And since I know the alarm, then it doesn't make any difference. Yes. This is the network. The other network is what you saw last time.
No, but that one goes only for the network.
That network, exactly. See, that's a very good question. There is no correct network. You know, in fact, it turns out that if you are drawing this network, this is your theory of this domain now. Okay? And now, one other question, of course, is, so when I introduce earthquake, there is a link from alarm to earthquake that I put because I believe that if alarm is going off, and I do know that alarm is going off, I would change my belief in earthquake. But the question is, would I also change my belief in earthquake if, in addition, I'm told burglary is going on? Because it reduces. So I have to put this. Okay. Again, what I did here was playing the expert about Los Angeles homes. Neither of us are Los Angeles home experts. But based on that, based on our understanding of how things work, we put in those links. Now it turns out that once you put the links, you know what conditional probabilities do you need to get. Okay? So in this particular case, if you introduce the things in burglary first, earthquake next, then alarm, then John calls, then Mary calls, the same domain knowledge you have would have let you draw that particular network. It's not that these two are different domains. Knowing what you know in English about this domain, if the variables were introduced in that order, burglary, earthquake, alarm, John calls, Mary calls, then you'd have had a sparser network. Here, this is less sparse network. Sparsity means more edges. I mean, sparse means lesser number of edges. Okay? Now, in this particular case, you can compute how many probabilities do you need. It turns out that will be, in this case, you did 12 probabilities. For that, you only needed 10 probabilities. And in the worst possible scenario, you would actually introduce everything in the let's see. So here is another version where you introduced Mary calls, John calls, earthquake, burglary, alarm. That's what you introduced, the order. And the same exact domain knowledge would have let you put those many links. Okay? In particular, if after you put all these guys, then you introduce alarm, then you say, is your belief going to depend upon burglary, earthquake, John calls, Mary calls, every possible configuration? Yes, unfortunately. And so in fact, it has four parents. Every little variation in the configuration, the probability can change different. Okay? So in this case, of course, there are 31 probabilities, which is the maximum you should ever need. Because the total probabilities that you can ever need is 32. In the joint entry, there are 32 independent probabilities, and 31 independent probabilities. And so you could possibly not have asked for more than 31 anyway. This is the worst case scenario. But if you put them in the causal order, you could have gotten away much better. Okay. Now, you notice in this discussion that one of the important things to do is to cut down the number of edges. Because the sparser the graph, the fewer the number of nodes, and the fewer the number of CPTs. Now consider the following scenario. I have n nodes influencing m nodes. Okay. Turns out that somehow, think of for now, just make it simple and say, think of each of these is a sort of, think of these are all sort of numeric variables, okay, and each of these is some linear expression on all these variables. Think about that. Okay. So in general, of course, what you would have to do is you have to put for each of these links from all the n. Right? How many probabilities would you need to specify this network? This guy has n parents. It needs 2 power n numbers. There are m guys like him. M times 2 power n numbers for just these m these lower level nodes. Plus for the upper level nodes, assume for now, actually I'll change my mind, let's assume that they are like 0, 1 variables. Okay, so they are Boolean variables. So upper level, I would only need one number each for each of the variables. So n numbers. Those many numbers I need. Suppose I introduce an extra variable into this graph. Could I potentially reduce the number of numbers I need? I'm saying increase the size of the graph by increasing the number of nodes. Could I potentially reduce the number of probabilities I would need? It turns out the following. Suppose it turns out that I know about this domain, that really what these guys are causing is, you know, in this case, this is the best case possible. They are in essence causing, this let's say is the sum variable. It just adds up all the guys. And suppose these guys are all really dependent only on the sum. These are different thresholds on the sum, let's say. Then in that case, I could wind up being in the following kind of a scenario. How many numbers would I have needed there? I would have needed, to get this guy, I would need 2 power n. For each of these, I need 2. There are m of them, so that's 2m. And this is still n. So n plus 2 power n plus 2m, whereas this is m times 2 power n. Much larger number of numbers. So I induced sparsity into the domain by making a hidden intermediate concept. So if you think in terms of all Bayes networks being written in causal direction, and if you think of medical domains, these are diseases. These are symptoms. What's this middle guy? Have you ever heard of middle guy in medicine? When you go to a doctor and the doctor knows what your symptoms are, but before they say what your disease is, they say you have something in between. And then based on that, we'll go to the disease. What does AIDS stand for? What does AIDS stand for? Acquired immunodeficiency syndrome. It's not a disease. It's a syndrome which could cause certain diseases. Diseases are things like Kaposi's sarcoma and all those other things. Okay? We actually do this in our world. What we do is we generate intermediate concepts. Okay? And connect up observables to these intermediate concepts. Okay? And so you may well not be able to directly observe the sum. You observe these guys, you observe these guys, but not this. But it's very useful to think in terms of this hidden variable because it cuts down the number of variables, number of connections, conditional probabilities that you will need to assess. So in medical domain, these are syndromes. Okay? So here is a more realistic Bayes network for car diagnosis. Okay. So these are the real true causes: battery age, alternator broken, fan belt broken. These are the true causes that ultimately make your car not work. Okay. These are the true symptoms that you get to see. Even people like you and me get to see. Okay. So car doesn't start. Gas gauge is telling me something, oil light is coming on, lights are coming on or not coming on. These are the two symptoms that you can see. What are these guys in between? They are intermediate to some extent. Nobody, when they get into a car, realize that there is no gas. They only realize that the gas gauge says there is no gas. And you know, all of you know that when the gas gauge says there is no gas, you can coast for another 20, 30 miles. Before getting stuck on the freeway and getting police to help you, right? So it's like gas gauge is could be wrong. I mean, in fact, you know, there is this hilarious Seinfeld episode that all of you know, I'm sure. You know, you can always. This is just a noisy instrument which is truly which is trying to find out this. The only way you know that there is no gas is you open the gas cap and try to, you know, turn the car like this. And if it's not falling out, then you know there is no gas. Yes, sir. So, but these are intermediates, and you'll notice that you introduce the intermediates to some extent to cut down, to make the graph more sparse. You have to speak louder, I can't hear you. It's a good question. I mean, it's like there could be, I mean, so for example, in this case, I introduced one node called sum, but that's the best case. What if I introduced 2n? Intermediate nodes. 2n intermediate nodes. 2m intermediate nodes. All of them are dependent on each of them, and then each of these are dependent on each of these, then you just killed yourself. That's much worse than before. So you can go wrong in making up intermediate concepts which wind up depending on everything. But the whole art of getting by in real world domains is to localize interactions. You understand what I'm saying? So in fact, there's actually a beautiful picture that I wish I could draw, but I can't, so I'll draw some random other picture. So the interesting thing is, suppose you have a car engine which sort of looks like this, let's say. Okay? Why are you laughing? I mean, it looks like a car engine. So the question is, you want to decompose how the car engine works by not looking at the entire thing, but somehow looking at pieces of it. In fact, you know, your mechanics say, you know, this system of the engine, this system of the engine, and then they talk about each of them interacting in different ways. Why not just say, okay, here is a sector, northeastern sector, southwestern sector, and it's not something, you know, piece, cut these pieces off, square piece, etc. And each of these is a little piece of the car engine. And then try to figure out how that piece works. And cut the thing through directly. Okay? We won't do it like that. In fact, we say that the fuel system of the car engine is sort of going topologically all over the place in the engine. Okay. Now, if you think of car engine as being made up of fuel system, ignition system, etc., versus you think of the car engine being made up of 15 broken in pieces, you can see that this one won't go anywhere. And figuring out that car engine, the best ways of understanding car engine is ignition system, fuel system, etc., is a huge domain knowledge. I don't necessarily know. I mean, I know it only because I listen to car talk, okay? But I didn't know at one point of time. Okay, so your question is well taken that you can introduce random of these variables into the network which have no real connection to any domain knowledge. In which case you would not have, you would have a hard time assessing these probabilities. You'd also have a hard time checking those conditions in any way. Okay. And so notice things like battery dead. It's another higher level condition, which battery dead will wind up affecting battery meter. It also affects battery flatness. Battery can be flat either because the battery itself is dead or the charging circuit is dead. So battery is fine, it's just the charging circuit is dead. So you're not getting any charge into the battery. Both of which would have killed the battery, which would then stop the life somewhat. So now that you got this picture, you know what numbers you need. Assuming these are all Boolean, should be able to tell me right away how many numbers you need to specify this. Okay? Of course, the bad guy here is this guy. Car won't start. And it would wind up needing the maximum number of numbers. Here is another one, car insurance. You know, these are all things that people actually wrote down, sitting, you know, and writing down what causes what. So this one is saying age, my God, apparently ultimately causes liability cost. You know this, right? I mean, so the older people at a certain level get cheaper insurance, and when you become really, really old, again, it starts increasing. But the reason is there is a causation which goes through the intermediate concept. Okay? Now, one other thing, of course, is, so I talked about the whole game in Bayes networks is reducing the number of numbers that you need to assess. So you try to introduce variables in the causal direction. That's one idea. Second idea that we talked about is you try to introduce useful intermediate concepts, such as that middle node earlier, which can sort of localize the influence. You know, so it kind of collects all the influence from the parents and then separately sends it out to the descendants. That cuts down the number of numbers you would need. Okay. Here is one other one which I already talked to you earlier, which is the CPT tables themselves, the conditional probability tables themselves, can be represented in a parameterized fashion rather than by actually giving every number. So if I have n parents, then I normally need 2 power n different numbers. Okay. But what if I have the following idea? What if I say, I have n parents, any one of them can cause me. So for example, this is death, to end the class on a happy note, and this is whichever bad disease you can think of, and this is various types of guns, gun 1, gun n, and I shouldn't probably write this because guns don't kill people. So we should write something else. But anyway, so you would write all these diseases which can cause death. Now, you do know that one is enough to kill people. So you don't need 2 guns to kill somebody. You know, one, if it works, one is enough. Okay, although I guess in all these cartoon things, there is a firing squad, everybody is standing there. Why do you think everybody is standing there trying to fire at the poor guy in the middle? Actually, there are 2 reasons. There's one real reason. How many people know what is the real reason? Yes, he has done this. You go ahead.
Not everyone has a live bullet.
You don't know who killed them. That's actually, A, they don't have necessarily live bullets, and B, you may not know ultimately whose bullet actually killed. So you don't have to be ridden with guilt, as if it wasn't bad enough that, you know, you're part of the 7 people who killed this guy. But at least, you know, you won't have to think that you are the guy who killed this guy. Okay? Right? So that's the real reason. But the other possibility is, suppose all of these are bad shooters, like me. Right? Right? So the question is, every one of these guys can miss. Anybody doesn't miss, this guy dies. Okay, so think of these are really N guns. Any gun works, death true. Now the question of course is, what is the probability that, so the only interesting thing that I want to ask is the following. What is the probability that when the gunner I shot and missed, what's the probability that they missed? That the miss probability is, even though they shot, the guy isn't dead. Okay, suppose I give you that probability, that let's say is QI. So QI is the probability that even though gun I is true, death I is false. Death is false. Okay, that one guy is unable to kill. Now remember that all the people will fire. Okay, so the question then is, suppose that there is some configuration, true, false, false, true, false, let's say on the parent node. Then I'm interested in finding out what's the probability that death occurs, given that this guy fires, and the rest don't fire. Okay? The only interesting thing I'm interested in is, for the guys who did fire, what is the probability that they didn't kill? Suppose I assume that each gunner's miss probability is independent of other gunner's miss probability. They are not looking at each other. It's bad enough situation, right? So you're just not looking at each other. You're looking straight and shaking and, you know, fired. So your probability of missing is independent of the other guy's probability of missing. So, and this guy will live if all the guys who fired missed. So 1 minus the multiplication of the probabilities of everybody missing, everybody who fired missing, will give me exactly the death probability. Now, normally, I would need 2 power n numbers to specify this. How many numbers did I ask you right now? N numbers. I just asked you n numbers. This turns out to be noisy R. There are n guys trying to kill you. Any one of them can kill you. Any one of them can miss too. The miss probability is independent of each other. In that case, you would get noisy R here. Now this one is kind of less violent. In this case, we are talking about diseases, cold, flu, malaria, and a symptom, fever. Each of them can cause fever independently, and their probability that they won't cause fever is independent of other guy's probability of not causing fever. Okay, so the only numbers I really need to give in this case is, if only malaria is true, what is the probability that fever won't occur? If only flu is true, what is the probability that fever doesn't occur? And if only cold is true, what's the probability that fever doesn't occur? 3 numbers. And then every other number is implicitly specified because of my assumption. So for example, I know these numbers definitely, because this is 0.1, this is 0.9, this is 0.2, this is 0.8. Now what about this guy? Flu is true, malaria is true, and still the probability that both are true, fever won't be caused, is 0.2 times 0.1, because though both of them not causing is independent. So that would be 0.02, which means this will be 0.98. Pretty darn nice. So you're actually able to compute every entry in the CPT just knowing n numbers. Now you made a big assumption here, which is that we see the noisy R distribution, that is the failure probabilities are independent of each other. But it's okay, this is a distribution. I mean, this is an assumption on how things are distributed. Now, the other example I gave you about these kinds of parameterized distributions were things like normal distribution. So for example, if the variables are continuous valued, then you might say one variable is dependent on its parents, and they are continuous, you are continuous. So the question is, how many conditional probabilities are you going to give? You would just say, well, I'm just multivariate normal distribution on my parent. Okay, then you will only need just the mus and the sigmas. Just because we have noisy R, we can also have noisy AND. Okay. So what would noisy AND do? It essentially says the probability, so the noisy AND, so in this case actually you notice that the way you compute the probabilities are using that particular formula. Okay. So here for everybody who is actually true, you multiply their probability that they won't cause Y to be true, subtract it from 1. For the noisy AND, it's almost the same expression except you do the opposite, which is, so in an AND, noisy AND distribution, everybody must be true before, so all these guys must work together for this to be true. But it's noisy AND, so normal AND means if any one of these isn't true, then this won't be true. Noisy AND says any specific parent may actually be redundant, sort of redundant. So even though that particular parent is false, the child may still be true with some probability. Okay? So instead of looking at not causing fewer probabilities here, you might be looking at not being, I mean, so even if you are false, what's the probability that the child will be true? And those are the numbers you would look at. So I'll call them RIs. And then again, you will multiply all the RIs. I don't need to take one minus anymore. Look at this. This is, you can have, you know, the variables might have noisy R distribution as a relationship, noisy AND distribution as a relationship. And let's see, I may have gone out. There are other things that you should look at in the book. For example, if you have conditional child variables, you might connect them to the continuous child variables, you might connect them to the parent variables in terms of things like normal distribution. Okay, in this case, you are assuming that the mean of the child is linearly related to the values of the parent. Okay. Now, these are all assumptions that you are making about how things are connected to each other. The more assumptions you make about how the world works, the fewer numbers you need. Okay, because every big assumption you make, it can cut down the number of numbers you need. So that's basically how to construct BayesNet, and I'll end here, I think. To construct, you decide what are the kinds of variables, you introduce them into the network, you put the links whenever, you know, there is dependency, and once you do that, you can also try to, and then you can know what conditional probability tables you need, and when you know that, you can try to reduce the numbers needed to specify those tables by using parameterized distributions, such as noisy R, noisy AND, normal distribution, and so on. If you do all this, then you have a Bayes network. Then the only question is, how do you reason with it? Okay? You already know how to reason with it one way, because Bayes network uniquely determines the joint probability. And if you know the joint probability, you know how to reason with any probabilistic query. What we'll do next class, the whole of next class, is to talk about both exact and approximate methods for doing this more efficiently than by just completely showing the joint distribution and adding the number. Okay, that's it. There are more raspberry bars, feel free to take them.